Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. There's finally light at the end of the tunnel on the discussion involving Caspian Sea dispute that after years of talks, it looks like that an agreement is in the horizon and it might be signed in the second week of August. Details are still coming, but if what we know so far is true, Turkmenistan will finally be able to build its Trans-Caspian pipeline, which it had dreamed for since its independence in 1991. But oddly, I see no excitement in Turkmenistan for this pending resolution. And also, interestingly, the drumbeat for this draft agreement is coming from Russia, which has opposed the process from the beginning. On today's Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast, we are hoping to get to the bottom of what is it that is about to happen, how did things reach to this point, and what is in it for the Caspian littoral states. Joining me in the discussion are Dr. Robert Kuttler, senior researcher at the Institute of European, Russian, and Eurasian Studies at the Carleton University in Canada, Georgi Washakmatsa, advisor to the Georgian Prime Minister for the East-West Energy Corridor, is joining us from Georgia, Dr. Teresa Sabonis-Helf, Professor of National Security Strategy at the National War College, is joining us from Washington, D.C., and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi, is with us from Prague. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us.
Thank you.
Bruce, let's get into this. So what do we know about the draft agreement or proposal which is talking about the resolution of this dispute?
Well, I think the big thing about this is that it allows countries that share a maritime border in the Caspian Sea to decide just bilaterally that they can lay down a pipeline and start shipping, exporting not just gas, but oil. You mentioned the Trans-Caspian pipeline, but I mean, this opens up a number of possibilities now, because as Georgi would be able to tell you too, White Stream is dependent upon gas getting across from Central Asia into the Caucasus and then further on. So that gives his project a big boost, and it might be realized soon, finally. And also, there's the oil pipeline that Kazakhstan and Azerbaijan have been planning for quite some time too. This seems to remove all those obstacles. Now, obviously, I've only seen the draft agreement, and there's got to be some other details here that still need to be worked out somewhere further down the line. But as it reads, this should be the breakthrough that people have been waiting for more than 20 years.
Yeah. Okay, let's get, Georgi, your point on this. So what do you see in this document? And I know details are yet coming, but as far as you know.
Oh, this document is a great happening because it, I would say, clarifies things. Mm. As you know, I've been saying all the time, based on what was the stance of the European Commission at the United States, also shared by Azerbaijan and Turkmenistan, that there was no legal obstacle for Trans-Caspian ever.
Yeah.
And therefore, I would use the language like it clarifies, rather than to say that it allows, because as we know, there was a very clear possibility in late 90s to have the Trans-Caspian pipeline. Then Trans-Caspian could be part of the Nabucco project, and this could happen even without such convention or clarification. But now, because this is the case, this certainly mitigates a lot of uncertainty which there was spread out, many business people, let alone politicians, been thinking that until such convention is done, there should not be any investments in this direction. So now I think it's a great thing, and we have to hurry up, because the more serious problem, rather than the absence of this convention, is that there is a window of opportunity to get to the European gas market. If Turkmen gas is late, then there will be no chance. We are very hopeful that these things will accelerate things.
Okay. Dr. Kuttler, Georgi was saying that it clarifies some of the projects rather than allowing. So how big of a deal is this, what's happening in the second week of August in Kazakhstan?
Well, yes, I believe that Georgi is correct that the proper term is to clarify rather than to allow, as the two countries, Azerbaijan and Turkmenistan, had always this Right. What it does clarify is the business environment. It provides certainty that's necessary for the investments. And it is indeed a very big deal. And I would go so far as to say, and I think it is not sufficiently recognized, that it is as strategic a pipeline, the Trans-Caspian is as strategic a pipeline as the Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan pipeline was 20 years ago, that established, reinforced the independence of those countries participating, and also commercially happened to be very advantageous. The European Union, of course, has been behind in trying to help with the Trans-Caspian gas pipeline for some years, but they are mainly interested in the economic benefit, and they do not have the political weight that the United States does to declare, as they did for the BTC, that it is a strategic project that helps, again, to clarify, to stabilize the situation in Georgia, both economically and politically, as well as to extend in a positive way the influence on the onto the other side of the Caspian. It is a demonstration project. The Trans-Caspian pipeline, I would say, would be a demonstration project. Without it, the Kazakhstan oil pipeline will be discouraged, let us say. And just as the BTC made possible the South Caucasus pipeline and the Southern Gas Corridor, the TCP will be a signal to international investors and to international politicians that this can go forward and that it will be possible for Turkmenistan and Kazakhstan to rely politically, not only economically, upon the West in order to balance the various interests that they have to balance.
If that happens. So, Dr. Teresa, so your thoughts on what we have been talking about in terms of the how big of a deal is this, and also some of the details that so far came out from this draft agreement. And also, you know, it's a big change, as all of our panelists were saying. So who is really benefiting from this change?
Well, I think my colleagues explained the significance very clearly. The key challenge that I'm still waiting for August to hear, and I know I've recently been in Azerbaijan, and from the Azerbaijan perspective, everyone's very anxious until the conference is completed. There still will be an opportunity for environmental adjudication. And as Russia has learned in its challenges in the Baltic Sea, environmental adjudication can delay projects significantly. So I'm very hopeful for Turkmenistan, but I think there is still the possibility that disputes will move to a different and clearer court rather than vanishing entirely.
Why you say that?
Why do I say that? Yeah. Well, it's essential for Russia's current interactions with Europe to buttress the argument that Gazprom is a company and not purely an arm of the Russian state. Finally allowing the resolution of the Caspian Sea and not as a state blocking that adjudication is important for optics in Europe. And I think this is the incentive for Russia to finally move on this issue.
Interesting.
If I may step in, I fully agree. This is a key, probably the key issue for Russia, because there are many other things which is covered by convention, and Russia apparently have seen that Turkmenistan will never give up, and same as Azerbaijan, the right to build the pipeline, and now it's probably a good position or face-saving position after so many years of kind of trying to state the negative about the Trans-Caspian. And I also agree that environmental things will be the key, and that's why we should not waste time. As everybody is aware, European Commission and the World Bank have spent about $1 million to make a scoping, environmental scoping for Trans-Caspian, which was a great job. Now it has to be complemented with engineering details, and it will take time, so we need to hurry up.
Dr. Teresa, you often go to Turkmenistan, one of the few Western scholars who are still able to access the country. And just coming back to you, you know, some of the points you mentioned, and also one thing that you can't avoid paying attention is that, you know, this seems to be huge development, and Turkmenistan seems to be standing in a position which would benefit from this more than any other country if this happens. So why there is no excitement in Turkmenistan about it? Why nobody's talking about this? Not even the media is saying anything about this. Is there anything that we don't know yet?
Well, I think, and I always feel very privileged when I get to go to Turkmenistan. It is not as often as I'd like, but it is my sense that Azeri-Turkmen relations have begun to warm again, but there is a moment here that's problematic. And the moment is that over the past 2 years, Azerbaijan actually had a gas crisis. Their domestic demand had grown faster than new supply. And Azerbaijan was actually in a period where they were having to, they were buying some Turkmen gas across Iran, and they were actually having to buy some Russian gas. And they were pushing very hard for what is known as the technical pipeline. The technical pipeline is where I would begin if I were Turkmenistan, because it's something that could be brought online very quickly. The technical pipeline is simply joining some of the Turkmen oil fields that are already in the Caspian Sea, taking that gas, which is currently being flared, and bringing it to inject in some of the Azerbaijan oil fields where the pressure is too low and it's having to use more and more gas to keep up production of oil. The reason the technical pipeline was nominally attractive is that it doesn't allow any Turkmen gas actually in the pipeline going to Europe. So Russian objections presumably would be lower. Second of all, it would supply a proof of concept. And third of all, it would help resolve some of the Turkmen government relation difficulties with the companies that are drilling that are having to flare their gas, like Dragon Oil. So I don't know if they'll move forward with that or not. There has been some limited evidence that Turkmenistan is moving in that direction. They, of course, would be much more satisfied with a large project, and the technical pipeline could not take more than 10 BCM, even in the most optimistic projections. But I would argue that movement forward on the technical pipeline would be an important proof of concept.
Dr. Kutler, I would be also interested in hearing your points on silence in Turkmenistan about this. And additionally, you know, Russia has always been in the opposition of any sensible resolution to this dispute, and especially against the Trans-Caspian pipeline, which might be reality after this agreement, if this goes through. So why Russia has suddenly signing in this? What has changed?
For Russia, the calculus is simply that the pipeline is less important to them than other security concerns have become. So that, as you know, in the last year or two, it's in fact Russia which became the driving force for the resolution of this convention. Now, whether that also has to do with the fact that the foreign minister Lavrov declared that he wished to relinquish his duties in the near future and he wanted to tie up this loose end before then, whether that's a consideration or not, I don't know. If so, it would be a minor consideration. But to be sure, halting the pipeline is simply less important to Russia than other security concerns have become. As for the silence in Turkmenistan, one understands that perhaps that one doesn't want to say anything before the fait accompli. And that might simply be the case. And as we know, the media in Turkmenistan are much more heavily still government controlled than the media in perhaps any other literal country, and they simply don't wish to. It doesn't require media attention. If I were in the media system in Turkmenistan, I would say this is a very good development, but we don't need to tell anyone about it right now because it's being handled on the diplomatic official level.
Yeah, why I was referring to media is just that, authorities do not react to everything, but when something is said on state media, and that also reflects somehow the authorities' position, even the media is also silent, so there has to be something going on there. So that was my thinking. Bruce, I know you want to say something about the Turkmenistan, Georgi. So what Putin is getting out of this?
Well, I think that this explicit permit, was not the main problem for the Trans-Caspian pipeline ever. And as Dr. Teresa mentioned, there could have been this kind of technical solution, which was clearly outside of this. But still, this solution was suggested in 2007 and never happened, despite the fact that it was lobbied quite seriously by many parties. So this is something that probably, as Dr. Cutler said, Russia would not gain anything by further kind of keeping this uncertainty on this, and certainly may not even prevent something. So theoretically, even if this declaration is not signed, this does not mean that Transcaspian is dead at all. Now, I would also comment on your previous question. I don't see that Turkmenistan is especially silent. One thing we need to always keep in account is that Turkmenistan's political approach was that I sell at the border to anybody who comes and wants to buy.
Yeah.
Therefore, I do not advertise any particular pipeline or any particular direction, although whenever they speak about diversification, they always mention European direction levels, including...
Georgi, counterpoint to that is, yes, Turkmenistan's policy has been that it wants to sell the gas on the border, whoever wants to take it. But when it comes to trans-Afghan pipeline, Turkmenistan's involvement, we know it, like it's investing billions of dollars and talking all the time. But no discussion about the Trans-Caspian pipeline when it seems to be happening. So that's kind of interesting point that I want to draw your attention.
That's a very interesting point. I absolutely agree. But we need to see that the Trans-Afghan pipeline actually has been developing in a little bit different way. This was Asian Development Bank who kind of been driving this process, and Turkmenistan was involved, and then it evolved step by step in this direction. Mm-hmm. So still, I think that this is, again, the exception, and not very straight exception. We have not yet seen the direct difference in this matter, although, of course, Turkmenistan took a lead in this direction. Mm. Now, going back to this other directions, still we see the picture that Turkmenistan is not yet ready to say, I will invest in Trans-Caspian pipeline. And certainly there was no movement on this technical solution. Now, we remember that European Commission been quite close, if Nabucco would go ahead, to have the option of Trans-Caspian pipeline included in Nabucco. Still, there was no participation on Turkmenistan's side, exactly because they have not seen the bigger picture. What was always a driving force for Turkmenistan is to see the bigger picture. And I'm not saying the guarantees for 30 BCM sale, but to see the how the big sale can be arranged, whether they are interested parties. Mm-hmm. The reason, as I think, why Turkmenistan is not showing excitement is that nothing has certainly changed from this point of view. The attitude that please come and take the gas is applicable to the Western direction.
Okay.
Now, the unfortunate thing is that Azerbaijan and European Commission are in the same position. They cannot also distinguish separate pipelines. You remember the Baku Declaration, where Azerbaijan have undertook the obligation to give the equal possibilities to any expansion of Southern Gas Corridor to any newcomer. That's why they are not in a position to say that we will invest in Trans-Caspian, and that's a clear thing. After the Nabucco failure, European Commission has also abandoned this policy of separating the flagship projects like Nabucco was. And therefore, there was a kind of vacuum that nobody was actively engaged in putting this forward. And that was why that Georgia have seen that if nobody would step in, the time will be lost, and maybe this issue of Turkmen gas will never be materializing. So, that's why Georgia has made a significant steps in and facilitated the activation of a Connecting Europe facility program for the Trans-Caspian pipeline, and turned the things into the doing a real job. Because other than intergovernmental agreements, what is needed is to create bankable documents. If there are no bankable documents, if there are no engineering design, no permissions can be acquired. If there are no permissions, then the project is non-existent. So that's where we are, and hopefully quite soon this will result in construction permit. And then European companies, American companies, even Turkmenistan mentions that Azerbaijan can actually be a trader. So there will be a basis for negotiating sales purchase agreements because mm-hmm. transit things will be clarified.
So what you are saying, Georgi, is that even if the opportunity opens up for Trans-Caspian pipeline, there is not enough interest in Europe to get that?
No, what I'm saying is that Europe is not focusing on any particular route and is deliberately creating a situation of competition that each project, each seller should take care to find a way how to get to European market. And this is a wise position. I think that has created an incentive. We have seen a lot of efforts vis-a-vis, let's say, for example, East Mediterranean pipeline and some other projects. So that kind of stimulates interested parties.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Okay, so...
Mohammed, may I come in on a previous point, possibly?
Yeah, briefly, please, yeah.
I don't know whether we'll return to it, so I just want to make a remark about the environmental and ecological questions. I suspect that whatever obstacles Russia tries to pose, if indeed it does, that they will be easily overcome. I believe this for the following reasons, that as Mr. Vashakmadze mentioned, there was the joint World Bank EU environmental impact statement a few years ago, which essentially gave the pipeline a green light. From that standpoint, that the draft of the convention that we've seen does not on its face require the approval of the other countries. It simply says that those who are building will deposit information. It does not invoke a veto prospect. Now, what is involved here on the side is the so-called Tehran Convention, with the full name of which is the Framework Convention for the Protection of the Marine Environment of the Caspian Sea, which was signed in 2003 and entered into force into 2006. And the key provision there, or the key aspect of there, is that there was or there is a committee or a of that which would have passed its opinion, and that it was insisted that this committee, not of the new Framework Convention, but of the Tehran Convention, should have to operate by unanimity. And I am not surprised if a protocol is signed to that convention or has already been signed in tandem with the August 12 agreement, because it is explicitly reported in the press a month or two ago that this has been overcome and that it will operate by majority rule, not by unanimity. And this was the institutional mechanism by which everyone was concerned. So I rather think that, given the green light from the World Bank European Union and the new institutional setup, that the environmental roadblock will be perhaps just a speed bump and not not a real hurdle.
Dr. Kutler's Tehran reference kind of reminded me that Iran is also a party in this discussion, but I also don't see much of excitement coming out of Iran too, and if it's not even against, how it has changed its position. It sounds like if this agreement goes through, Tehran is not in a good shape, I mean, in terms of its claims that it had historically on Caspian Sea. Bruce, what's your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the mystery. There's no doubt about it. The way the draft convention reads, Iran will get the smallest part of the Caspian, which is always what it was against. You know, but there's been a lot of things happening, especially with Russian relations lately, but not just with Russian. You know, first to start out with Azerbaijan, we know that the Iran and Azerbaijan have discussed joint development of fields in Azerbaijan's sector of the Caspian. So, you know, this might calm down some of the people in Iran who were against the deal, that they are going to get their share. There was discussions with Turkmenistan, which we have far fewer details about. I would imagine they were similar to the ones Iran had with Azerbaijan. And in the meantime, you know, I've noticed in the news lately that Russia's offering Iran a lot of other incentives that we didn't see before. One being that if the new sanctions that the U.S. put on Iran, if the Europeans are willing to follow through on those and pull stakes in Iran, that Russia would come in and help bail them out with $50 billion. Where they're going to come up with that kind of money, I have no idea. But at least one report I saw from Iranian news admittedly said that Russia was willing to start putting in significant amounts of money, up to $50 billion, into Iran's gas and oil sector. And then, of course, there was this other more vague report about Syria possibly being providing a transit route for Iranian oil and gas too, and we know that Russia has a lot of influence in Syria now, so does Iran. So these things might have convinced Iran that if they don't get their full cut, or what they believe is their full cut out of the Caspian Sea, that in the meantime other opportunities will be opened for them as compensation.
So
Sure. So we have to bear in mind that Iran holds a 10% stake in Shah Deniz II. And as a result of that, the Iranian-Azeri relationship was developing. And as you mentioned, there was hope that there would be some joint development in the Caspian. I think one of the things that we're going to see as a side effect of the new sanctions is Azerbaijan is so concerned about the fact that Shah Deniz has been exempt from the sanctions, but they're not going to want to do anything that would imperil that exemption. So I think what we're going to see is Azerbaijan's going to take a step backward from further investment in offshore in Iran, but Iran has already enshrined the offshore development as a policy priority for the current 5-year period. And as was just mentioned, what that means is there's going to be a role for Russia. But what we're seeing is that Iran's getting pulled into the sea because they need resources in the north of the country. Currently, all the production in Iran is in the south. Meanwhile, in the north of the country, demand keeps growing. They want to move forward with that development. And in order to do that, more calm relations in the Caspian are going to be an important part of that.
Interesting.
Very good point.
Thank you very much. The discussion about the Caspian Sea and its borders have been taking place for years, and there have been many points of disagreements, though we were focused on the pipeline. The Turkmen pipeline is just only one of the sticking points in this. So what else this agreement contains, and what could have been some of the give and takes leading to this conclusion? And more importantly, what is next if the agreement is indeed signed? We will continue the discussion talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast, we are discussing latest developments involving an apparent draft agreement about the dispute over the states of Caspian Sea borders. Joining me in the discussion are Dr. Robert Kutler, senior researcher at the Institute of European, Russian and Eurasian Studies at the Carleton University in Canada, Georgi Washakmatsa, advisor to the Prime Minister of Georgia for the East-West Energy Corridor in Georgia, Dr. Teresa Sabonis, Health Professor of National Security Strategy at the National War College in Washington, D.C., Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia Bloc, Kishlok Owozi in Prague. I am Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, colleagues. So, yes, we have a pretty good idea about what is coming up on the Caspian Sea, which seems huge after long negotiations and deadlocks. Now, as much as we know, do you think the agreement is a done deal, Dr. Kutler?
You're referring to the agreement on the Caspian Convention.
Yeah.
Well, it's as done a deal as things can be. I recall, which means 99.9%, I suppose. I recall a quotation cited in the press of an Azerbaijani diplomat about a month ago who said he was very optimistic, which is basically diplomatic speak for, I really want it to happen, I really think it will happen, but we don't know until it's actually signed that it will happen. And I believe that that's a good reading of the situation.
Georgi, is there anything still could derail this agreement, the upcoming agreement?
Well, there is always that can happen, some tactical things that one of the parties will decide to postpone. And this tactical thing can be caused by many different happenings very far from Caspian. The optimistic thing is that this deal actually gives parties a lot. And maybe we like some of these, maybe we don't like some of these, but that's how the balance have been striked. Now, if we focus on the issue of the security things, like no third parties, military and so on, that's a separator. This could be one reason. But I don't think the Caspian pipeline issue itself can derail this. But again, this was not a major issue, as you are aware. As I Dr. Kaplan mentioned also, the environmental studies have been performed with the participation of Turkmenistan and Azerbaijan. European Commission has made Trans-Caspian and White Stream a project of common interest in 2013 list, and now again Trans-Caspian is a project of common interest, and White Stream is included in the 10-year network development plan, which is a first step to be included in 2019 list. This is a very serious instrument. The Connecting Europe facility with associated Juncker Fund and other instruments is something which can make these pipelines happen. And that's why it could be the perception of all parties that when things will be developing, there is no way of stopping the Trans-Caspian. Therefore, it's a rational thing that thinks that the convention will be signed. Everything can happen, can be delayed, but eventually it will be signed.
Yeah,
if Dr. Helf would allow me just one last comment before you turn to her on the subject, that one thing that gives moderate confidence in the outcome is that all of the reports until now have been shown to be so. You'll recall that Lavrov, back in December of last year, announced that there was agreement, and then there were reports on that afterwards about clarifications about the on the Azerbaijani side about laying the pipelines and so on. It was said that now they have to translate it. They have specialists have to verify the translations, and that the timeline conforms with what was set out then. Although the meeting was foreseen for the first half of 2018. Now it's definitely set for August 12th. So I just wanted to mention that one thing that does not detract the confidence is that all of the reports on the progress since the end of last year have been shown to be true. And therefore, the current reports are not made weaker by that. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay. Dr. Teresa Helf, first, your thoughts on if there's anything still could go wrong in upcoming Kazakhstan agreement. The second is, assuming that things will go smoothly, how did the parties reach to this point? Walk us through some of the major breakthroughs in this.
Well, I am optimistic that it will be signed. And the main reason I'm optimistic is if we look at the most recent calendar changes, it was originally scheduled in June. It was moved to September. And then it was moved backward to August. And typically when a meeting at this level gets moved earlier rather than later, it is because everyone has gotten to an agreement that they'd like to lock down before things begin to fall apart. So I am optimistic that the status will finally be resolved. And I think that is cause for excitement and celebration. What I would call your attention to is that with pipelines and with energy exploitation, in recent years, we've misperceived where the risk is. We always thought that TANAP was higher risk than TAP, and yet TANAP is done on time and under budget, and TAP is creating problems. The key that we have to look at now moving forward for Turkmenistan in particular to capture meaningful success from a Caspian agreement has to do with timing. The contracts. The contract between Russia and Ukraine expires in 2019, and Russia has stated that after the contract expires, they don't wish to transit Ukraine anymore. So that creates moments of opportunity and uncertainty. But the contracts to Europe all expire in the 20s, and these contracts tend to be fairly long-term in nature. So getting a place in those contracts is going to be a rush to the finish, and that time pressure is going to be important. So there's a speed element here that's pretty urgent. Typically, what we've seen in the evolution of this debate, and it does seem extraordinary to people who haven't watched it closely, that there's been a 25-year argument over whether it's a lake or a sea. But essentially, what happened is the nations that had overwhelming commercial interests and power were able to work out some ways to move ahead without resolution. So Russia had no interest in resolving the southern portion because it already had the agreements it needed for the northern portion. I would argue that Iranian interest in actually developing the sea were a critical moment when things began to shift. And the Russian need to build a case that it is that Gazprom is a commercial power and that the hand of the state is not always right there with Gazprom. Russia's only begun trying to build that argument since 2014, and it's not currently a credible argument. So to build it further, Russia has had to step back from continuous political interference in the sea that we've seen characterize the past 25 years.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Help. Bruce, when Dr. Help was talking about some of the deadlines involving Europe, I remember a couple of years ago, you have had a chat with EU's energy commissioner, I believe, in which he was predicting the launch or maybe the completion of the Trans-Caspian pipeline by 2019. Then we couldn't sort out on what basis he was saying this, but perhaps a coincidence, but things are kind of moving in this direction. Coming back to the earlier question, Bruce, you read this document that's coming up very soon. What sounded like some of the give and takes in the countries, in the parties' ability to get to this point?
Well, you know, the one thing that stuck out for me was, you know, and Dr. Cutler had already mentioned that it has this provision that prevents any non-littoral Caspian country from having any kind of naval presence and kind of confines the littoral countries to the forces basically which they have now, which obviously gives Russia clear dominance over the Caspian Sea. You know, so this is something that everyone's going to have to consider when they go ahead with projects that do not involve Russia in the future. I mean, it was a couple of years ago that Russia launched cruise missiles from ships that were in the Caspian Sea at targets in Syria, and there was no military purpose in doing this, but it would seem to be a statement to the other countries, you know, of who was in charge, at least militarily, in the Caspian Sea. And will be for a long time now, you know, so this is problematic. If Russia doesn't have to act with hostility toward the other countries, it's already made its point. If especially a country like Turkmenistan, say 5 million people, very small military, you know, if they feel that Russia is, the Kremlin is displeased with something that they're doing, it's going to weigh on their decision-making process. There's no way to get around that. So that was one of the moments, anyway, I saw that Russia gets something out of that. Not that there would be another non-littoral state with a naval presence in the camp. The whole idea is ridiculous. But still, you know, it does formalize Russia's supremacy in the Caspian Sea. And it will be a factor in any projects that go forward in the future. They don't have to threaten them outright. The implied threat is already there.
Yeah. You know, it's such an interesting topic, and we were lucky to have such an informative panel today, but unfortunately we have to end the discussion. So let's do this with a couple of points. I see, Mr. Vashakhmadze, you are so excited about this opportunity. So tell us, what is next the day after the agreement signed in Kazakhstan?
Well, as you mentioned, Vice President Shevchovich once upon a time mentioned about the possibility of Turkmen gas coming in 2019. Things implying behind six was that it was possible. Now, what was a bad thing was that there was a very little amount of people who would be ready to take Turkmen's position as a starting point and think out of box how this can be then built up on this, because everybody wanted to have kind of easy solution or conventional solutions, that somebody like British Petroleum in Turkmenistan would have a title in the gas fields and then they would take care about pipelines. That's happened many times. But this particular situation with Turkmenistan required some different approach, which was absent. And that's why things have been delaying. So now what we have is a kind of instrument and mechanism which can put on the table some bankable documents and allow further development. That's why I'm optimistic, because that's something which was never happening. Now, additional thing for optimism is, of course, that Danube and TAP is kind of on its final stage. And yes, there are some problems in Italy, but I'm glad to tell you that the president of Italy been in Georgia a couple of days ago and been very optimistic about TAP and even discussed the Trans-Caspian pipeline and Georgia's role. So this will be resolved. I have no doubts about this. And that Turkmen gas can be at least half of this 30 BCM can be absorbed for the southern Europe and Turkey through the infrastructure which are already in the process of implementation, which have been paid. And that's a great stimulus, of course. Mm-hmm. And this opportunity should not be missed. If Turkmen gas will miss TAP and TANAP and some other gas will fill in, then chances for Turkmen gas will be much less. So that's why we have to fight against time.
Yeah, if this happens, it will be, of course, a big breakthrough for Turkmenistan, which seems to be stuck in current economic crisis there. So final points, Dr. Kutler, maybe to starting with you. So what will you be looking at after the Kazakhstan agreement to determine where things are headed going forward?
Well, after the Kazakhstan agreement, one looks to see the realization, the ratifications will be pro forma. One looks to see the continuation of the cooperation between Azerbaijan and Turkmenistan with the European Union on the one hand, with Georgia on the other hand, to go to the stage of physical works now that all of the scoping, what as Mr. Vasek Madze called it, the environmental scoping has been done. The European Union is co-financing these works. So far as the Trans-Caspian pipeline is concerned, the next stage should be the execution of the pre-FEED and other engineering studies, or the completion, rather, of the pre-FEED and other engineering studies that the European Union is co-financing.
Okay.
And if I might add, turn to one of the first things I said, that the European Union, again, looks at this mainly from an economic standpoint and cannot provide a political umbrella that only the United States can. And I would repeat only for your audience that it is correct, in my view, to look at the Trans-Caspian pipeline not only from its economic standpoint, which is important for all parties, but also as a strategic pipeline, which, in as we look forward into the 21st century, will be as important, if it is built, should be as important as the Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan pipeline was and is and has been shown to be.
Thank you. Thank
Mohamed, if I can build on this just very briefly, Mr. Carter mentioned the strategic aspect of it. This kind of projects bring a lot to the participating countries, and particularly to for the country like Georgia, which has only one chance. Georgia has to be a best student in order to fight its way towards better integration with the West. The Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan have made a quantum leap, helped Georgia to make a quantum leap in order in its reforms. Dozens of Western experts, especially Americans from all institutions, not only State Department, been here in Georgia helping to push things forward. At that time, I was a lead negotiator, leading the international negotiating team for Baku-Ceyhan and Shah-Deniz pipeline. And our common task was how to make this happen, how to increase the cake that everybody's share could be bigger. And this has been bringing a lot of knowledge and a lot of new thinking. And we have invented and adopted a new legal structure, a mixture or blend of the contract and the treaty, which have never been used in the past in the world. So this is a great opportunity, not only for cementing the Central Asia, Caucasus, and the West, but also in particular countries to build the interest into these countries. Mm-hmm. And this opportunity, if missed, cannot be substituted with anything else. Oh. That's a problem.
Okay. Dr. Help, Mr. Vasek Madze say this opportunity shouldn't be missed. So what will you be looking at after the Kazakhstan agreement to determine what people are doing with this opportunity?
Well, it used to be standard understanding that states don't build pipelines, corporations do. But if we look at the Eurasian landmass right now, all the pipelines currently under construction on the Eurasian landmass are state-led. And so for that reason, before we can hope to see outside investment and so on, what I'll be looking to see is what is the tempo and quality of the bilaterals. Are we seeing an increased engagement between Kazakhstan and Azerbaijan? Are we seeing that engagement between Turkmenistan and Azerbaijan? Azerbaijan is in a moment right now where their narrative is that transit is increasingly important for their future. And by that, they mean rail, but they also mean pipeline transit. I'll be interested to see how much leadership we're seeing from the states themselves and if they're following through on setting into place what needs to happen to make the corporations feel safe enough to invest.
Thank you. So, Bruce, final point.
Yeah, I'll be looking for to see how fast the Europeans move. You know, I talked to the head of the Nabucco project, Reinhard Mitchick, when Nabucco was still a thing. And of course, you mentioned I talked to Maro Shevchovic a few years ago, too. Yeah. And, you know, so they both indicated that they had the backing and they had companies willing to move in and start building as soon as possible. Now, they've had years to prepare for this. And when the agreement signed, if they were right, and I have no reason to doubt that, to have to see, they should be ready to go like the next day and start talking with the appropriate governments and companies and get this thing up and running as fast as possible.
Okay, let's see. Who knows? We might be back in this topic in the third week of August, depending on how things develop in Kazakhstan. Manuel, thank you very much for your insight. Dr. Robert Kuttler, senior researcher at the Institute of European, Russian, and Euro-Asian Studies at the Carleton University. Georgi Washakmatsa, advisor to the Prime Minister of Georgia for the East-West Energy Corridor. Dr. Teresa Sabonis-Helf, professor of National Security Strategy at the National War College. And Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia Blog, Kishlok Awazi. Thank you, colleagues, for your time and thoughts today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It was very nice. I probably should mention that the opinions that I put forward are only mine and do not represent the U.S. government or the Department of Defense or the War College.
Sure. So thank you. So this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. Until next week. Bye-bye.